Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Scott Stabile, the author of Enough As You Are and Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. He is a passionate love advocate who believes there is no force more powerful than love to create real connection and healing in our world. Scott guides transformational breathwork journeys and leads personal empowerment workshops internationally. His inspirational posts have attracted a huge and devoted social media following, including more than 350,000 Facebook fans. In this conversation, Scott and I explore his creative process for Enough As You Are, his journey and offerings around breathwork, and the importance of leaning into love and acceptance even during the darkest of times. Side by Side is now available on all major listening platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Amazon Music. Give us a like and leave us a review if you find value in our conversations. All our content is available at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. And if you'd like to connect with me, please visit www.robertkwonhome.com. Hi, Scott. So it's so nice to meet you. This is our first time connecting and getting to have a conversation. And I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy of your book, Enough As You Are. So to start off, congratulations on the launch of this book. I believe it just came out last month. So yeah.
Yeah. It's not even a month old. Thank you. And it's so nice to be with you too, Robert. Appreciate it.
You know, you have previously launched books such as Big Love, which I believe was your last big publication. Has your experience, I'm curious, after a few weeks in this, has experience of navigating a book launch changed for you? Does it get easier? Is it kind of the same old jitters for you?
Oh, this book is much easier than Big Love, in great part because Big Love was, personal essays. And so what I revealed in that book was a lot more personal.
Yeah.
Whereas Enough As You Are is short prose and more poetic pieces that don't dive into like the traumas in my life and all, in the way that Big Love did. So prior to Big Love coming out, I would say 3 weeks prior, I was starting to get really nervous. Like it was becoming clear to me that this was no longer just between me and the editor, this was going to be for anyone who wanted to read about my life. And so I wasn't second guessing anything I shared. I was just, you may have heard of the expression like a vulnerability hangover. And I think I was experiencing that prior to the publication. But with Enough As You Are, it feels very light. And not that the book is light in parts, but it's also deep, but it feels very different.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And it's been a while since I've read a book, a collection quite like this. And I found the experience so light, like you said. And sometimes in books about personal journeys and healing journeys, it can be not so light. So as you say.
Yes, life can be not so light all the time.
Yeah. Although I appreciate your rawness and your honesty in this book, nevertheless, especially in the me section, which we will get into. But as an introduction to some listeners, you're known as a love activist. So I'm curious to start, maybe the question would be, what does being a love activist mean to you? And how did you come to bear that name?
The way I came to bear that title, I'd long been someone who always stuttered through an explanation of what I do when someone's like, what do you do? Well, I make a lot of noise for love and I do it in writing and whatever I say. And then a writer, incredible human being named Glennon Doyle, who's someone I admire very much.
Yeah,
she was gracious enough to give an endorsement to Big Love. And in her endorsement, she said she referred to me as a love activist. And I had never put those two words together, but reading that, I thought, yeah, that's actually a title I'm happy to embrace. And what that means for me ultimately is just, I am someone who makes a lot of noise for the power of love in our lives. The power of self-love, the power of love is our greatest healer. And so for me, the idea of love activism is just remembering to bring the energy of love into whatever else it is we're doing, and to know that by doing so, we stand to create for ourselves and others a much richer, more meaningful and connected experience.
I wasn't quite aware that the Love Warrior bestowed Love Activist.
Yeah.
The title. I love that. Now that I see the, what's the word? I love the symmetry, I guess, because yeah. I've read Glennon Doyle's work and I love her. I love her using her voice in a similar vein as you, exactly. Okay. And you choose to do it through the power of language, the power of words. So it does make me wonder, I believe I saw or heard in an interview that you didn't really pursue writing as like a passion until university, college. So, but were you writing before you went into university?
Not really. I would say I always excelled in English in like high school and middle school, and would always get A's and A pluses on my papers and things like that. So I feel like writing came to me fairly naturally, but I never really took a dive into creative writing until really into my 20s. I was early 30s. I would say in college, I started journal writing more. I went on the 6-week program on the East Coast, and we were studying transcendental authors like Thoreau and Emerson and Emily Dickinson. And yeah. Part of the 6-week experience is that we had to keep a journal. And that was my first time really keeping a journal and daily writing into the journal. And that practice lived on throughout my whole life, but in a really rich way in my 20s. But it wasn't until my 30s that I really started to approach creative writing differently. And I was with my ex-partner at the time, mm-hmm. and we were in a movie theater, and it was this indie gay film. And look, art is all subjective. So I believe like someone may have responded to this movie differently than I did. But at the end of this film, I felt like I had just seen one of the worst artistic creations I'd witnessed, or at least something that did not resonate with me at all. And I looked at my partner at the time, and I'm like, I am certain I could write something better than this. And he's like, well, then do it. And that's really what started me on a creative writing journey. I wrote a screenplay right like after that experience, which in retrospect was terrible also, but it got me started in creative writing in a different way. And I don't know if you read Big Love, but if you did, you may know that I actually wrote a screenplay that got produced, and it is still to this day the lowest grossing wide release movie of all time. I wrote the biggest flop of all time.
So I went to Tisch for screenwriting. So, you know, okay. When I heard that part of the story, I have not read Big Love. I plan to in the near future. But when I saw that portion of your journey, I was like, immediately I was triggered, was my thought. Just knowing all the things that you had to navigate. Nevertheless, you continued with it, which I think is a big statement about your relationship to writing and to creativity, perhaps. And I don't know to what degree that has to do with maybe you were at a later point in life and just had a stronger core sense of self. But I'm curious, how would you define your relationship to inspiration or creativity? Meaning the words on your pages, where do you think they come from?
I mean, I would say my relationship to it is a host of things, including frustrating is one of the first words that comes up for me. A writer is one definition I give myself, and I enjoy writing. And I do believe that there's something that comes through around the kind of writing I do in Enough As You Are, when we're talking about self-love and finding our way back to self and offering grace to ourselves and compassion to others. I feel like I can articulate those types of thoughts in a way that seems to resonate. But I feel like I'm a much better speaker, honestly. Like I can talk about these subjects for me with much more eloquence than I'm able to write about them, which is in part why writing feels frustrating to me, because I feel like just get me talking and eventually good stuff is going to come through in a much easier way than it tends to with writing. And then with writing, there are moments where you're a writer, so you get in the flow, and when I'm able to give myself over to that flow, things feel a lot better, so it's all over the place. It has highs, it has lows. I'm at a place in my life, Robert, where I also am wanting to be more collaborative in all that I'm doing, and writing is so solitary and isolating. So even now, a lot of my writing is done in coffee shops, just to be out in the world and be experiencing the energy of the world, because I tend to spend a lot of time on my own.
Yeah.
What about you what's your relationship with creativity and writing?
I was very moved by the TED Talk by Liz Gilbert. I don't know if you've seen it. I think it was, very well known, right? Yeah. And that wasn't the first time I had heard someone describe inspiration as like almost something that you would receive as a gift. Yeah. And not only that, but it wasn't so ego-driven. These are just like collections of thoughts and insights, and whoever makes a commitment to translate it and bring it forth, then that is sort of the assignment, and that partnership is complete. But I didn't really think of writing in that way when I was in college studying writing. In fact, I remember someone who won a Pulitzer for playwriting. I was in her workshop and she described writing in the same way. And I remember maybe scoffing a little bit, mostly because I just didn't understand where that was coming from or how it would, quote unquote, help me as a writer. And now in my 30s, I see writing as a much more delicate relationship. It's almost like a human relationship, me and my creativity. Yeah. And hopefully I've become more gentle and a little more forgiving of myself so that I can also have more fun. That's been a big goal of mine, is realizing how many writers struggle with just enjoying writing.
Yeah.
And it's a real thing. And
it's a real thing.
I very much am still trying to figure that out, or quote unquote, find my answer for that. But it's a real struggle sometimes for writers.
Absolutely. And I would say my relationship with writing these days, right now, and I don't have any sort of deadline, so it makes it easier to have this relationship, is if I feel like writing, I'll write. But I'm not someone who's in a place right now in my life where every day get your butt in the chair for this, this many hours, which I know a lot of writers do, and that works for them. And it has worked for me, especially when I have had deadlines, because you have to get your butt in the chair and write.
Right.
But in general, I'm like, if I feel like writing, I'll write until I don't feel like writing, and that's the relationship I have now, which makes the relationship feel a lot friendlier and more joyful, because I am only writing when I'm feeling like writing.
Do you feel like having, part of your story is just building this massive online community, particularly on Facebook? And you talked about writing being kind of a solitary experience, which I also experience as a pianist. When we practice in those rooms to hear ourselves, you're just stuck in a room all by yourself, very similar to writing. I wonder why I picked that path too. But does having an online community shift the experience for you, because so much of it was cultivated within connection and perhaps conversation?
I think it shifts the experience just knowing that there are people out there reading and responding to things that you are choosing to share. So it's a lot less solitary in a way, because there are people out there who are engaging with the writing that I'm, sharing. So I know, and I get a lot of emails and DMs and messages from people just letting me know that my writing is having a positive effect on them. So from that perspective, sure. Because if I didn't, even when you have a book out there, if someone takes the time to review it or send you an email, but that happens much less frequently than it happens on social media, because it's so much easier to do through social media.
Yeah.
So if I didn't have that outlet, I'd be much less aware, I'm sure, of how my writing is touching people. So from that perspective, yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of that, I wanted to read a reflection or a piece of writing from NFSUR.
Oh, great. I would love that.
And this writing goes, "You never know when you'll be the person who ignites an awakening in someone else. That's why it's so important to weave kindness and love into our interactions as often as possible." And to paraphrase a little bit, you can't predict when you will be the catalyst for something wonderful to light up another human being, but there will be many such moments when your love and compassion are just what someone needs to feel understood and okay and inspired to feel seen. I'm curious if you can think of a moment when someone in your life or a connection was a catalyst for your personal transformation or your journey, or vice versa, when you were the catalyst?
I think so often in both cases, I would say. And what I mean by that is, like, what's coming to mind is you asked the question. I'm remembering a time when I was living in Panama and I was in the grocery store and I was really low that day, just woke up feeling like crap and was carrying that into the day. And the woman who was at the checkout counter was so joyful, was just shining, just radiating joy and smiling big. And we had this kind of clumsy interaction only because my Spanish was very clumsy at the time and she didn't speak English. But it was filled with light and it was filled with her spirit. And I left that store an entirely different person than I was when I entered that store. And I offer that example because I think we feel like sometimes it has to be these profound experiences. Like, I spent 8 hours chatting with a guru and left there. I sat with ayahuasca, which I have several times, and had extraordinary experiences every time. But oftentimes it's just understanding, like, for me, the power of love. And when I say love, I'm referring to love as an umbrella term for compassion, forgiveness, kindness, empathy. All of these things are love in action. They reflect love in action. It's understanding that that power is alive within us all the time. And sometimes it's just the most basic interactions that can connect us to another person's humanity and remind us that we are not alone here in this world. And when we feel most powerless, when we feel most hopeless, and it's easy to feel powerless and hopeless in the face of the violence and insanity that is very real here.
Yeah.
But when I remind myself, my goodness, the effect I can have on another human being just by being open and kind out there in the world is a tangible thing. It's tangible in the way that it reminds me of my power. It's tangible in the way that it reminds me of another's humanity, the way in which we really are all connected. Those are not just cliche terms. When you really start to pay attention to how you affect others and are affected by others, it's harder to justify these calls for separation and division that we see being so easily justified out there. And so these types of moments are the moments that for me are impactful. And I could name dozens of specific individuals. We referenced Glennon. She is a person who has affected me and my path in these past 8 years in a profound way. Her willingness to, her courage to really share deeply uncomfortable truths, right? Her willingness to keep her heart open and to listen, like, that's big for me, right? So there are any number of examples of that.
Well, and I love the way that you put the scope, right? Sometimes it could be a passing moment that both people forget with a stranger that you'll never see again. And other times it's these sometimes lifelong relationships in some ways, right? That can also be transformative. And I love that you can find that wherever it may be. I'm curious a little bit about some of the creation behind Enough As You Are, because as I was reading it, I found I was really affected by the formatting, by the font, by kind of the visual flow of where you placed the reflections and the poems. And then, of course, you had to decide in how to order these reflections. And I don't know how much of your input was involved in this, but I'm just curious if you can share anything about how that was decided and what the thought process was.
Sure. As far as the flow and the sectioning, I mean, it's three sections, you, me, and us. That was my creative choice. And then the flow of how I laid all the pieces was my creative choice. I mean, in conversation with the editor, but I, you know, the spreads, the two pieces that show up together, it's not just by coincidence on each open spread. You know, they're meant to flow in that way. And then the design, though, Robert, I'm so delighted by it, honestly, and I had nothing to do with that. The team at New World, their designer, they sent me a bunch of different options for font and different, you know, throughout the book, there are some, these aesthetic design details. And for me, my only kind of suggestion or desire was that there weren't too many. There were enough, so it gives the book a different kind of personality, but not so much that it feels over stylized or anything like that. And mm-hmm. I feel like they did it so beautifully. I love the design details throughout the book. I love the fonts. I love the layout. I love all of it. And then, yeah, as far as deciding the pages where I lay out the writing more like poetry.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a little off center, right?
Yeah. That's more just kind of what I'm feeling in the moment, how I want to lay out a piece of writing. You know, mm-hmm. and sometimes, honestly, sometimes it is also aesthetically, like sometimes I let the aesthetic of that flow determine where a word might end up landing on a line. You know, there are a lot of things right. that might come into play. And sometimes it might be if I think that creates a little bit of a different aesthetic. Why don't we try that word on that line? And even sometimes I'll look for a different word in my head that might. Right. create a flow. That's a little less rare because usually what I write is what I want to be written. And so I'll have to fit the flow into the writing versus change the writing to accommodate a flow.
Oh, understood. Yeah. And then distinctly, there are three sections. It starts with you and then me, and then it ends with we. And when you read it, it becomes quite clear, you know, how they're divided in terms of who you're addressing and all of that. But why is it important for you to include and hold all three perspectives?
Well, when I started to put together this book, which is really a collection of pieces of writing over many, many years, what I was noticing, I mean, the way I write, it's either second person, you are, or first person, I am, or for the collective, like we are, or let's. And so all of my writings were falling into those. And then when I started to choose the writings I was most excited about and put them in the sections, what I noticed is that a lot of the writings in the you section, when I do write in the second person, mm-hmm. the energy tends to be very much like me as a cheerleader. Me reminding people how worthy they are, how beautiful they are, reminding people to remember that they are enough, or to consider this about themselves, or consider this about them, their lives. So that section has a lot of that kind of cheerleader energy, like, you can do it. I believe in you, you know? And then the me section, it tends to be, well, obviously it's me and I, so it's much more self-reflective.
Yeah.
But those pieces tend to be, they're a little deeper, like they can carry a little more heaviness to them. Like I'm reflecting on aspects of my personality that are tough to make peace with. And how do we make peace with the parts of ourselves that we don't like necessarily? Can we still shower them with love? Can we still offer them grace? Can we mm-hmm. still remember that within the context of our personality traits that are difficult to like, that we are human still, and that we are worthy still, and that we are enough still. So that section has a little more depth in that way, I think, to it. And then the us section is kind of a combination of both those two, because there's a lot of cheerleading, but there's a lot of calling out, for lack of a better word, in the us section, like, look at how we're showing up and look at what other possibilities are available to us. Why wouldn't we be steering ourselves to possibilities that are more reflective of love and compassion and kindness? But how was it for you? I should be asking you. You're the reader. Like, what do you think of the section?
Yeah, thank you. You know, the first section, you, I suppose I would say I agree with that. It very much felt like an encouragement, a form of like cheerleading, as you say, but in a very heartfelt way. Yeah. But I will agree the me section probably hit me emotionally the most. I don't know if surprise is the word that comes to mind, but the contrast between the you section, like the cheerleading energy, uh-huh. with the me section, particularly your writings around envy and jealousy, was so, mm-hmm. to me, very raw and honest and unfiltered, despite, you know, your being thoughtful as a writer. That contrast really struck me. And I personally love that you hold the bigger perspective for we and you, mm-hmm. and yet you were willing to, you know, I think sink to a certain level of depth with self-examination, I suppose. Yes. And I was like, wow, that's really powerful. So that was, I would say, you know, the me section was really hit me.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, feeling your energy and meeting you.
It does make me think of another quote that I will share that I think is from the we section.
Okay.
We live in a beautiful and insane world. The media focuses almost exclusively on the insane aspects, and we in turn come to view our reality as only cruel, violent, and hopeless. We're not doing a disservice to others by turning off our TVs or shutting down our devices and choosing to meditate, write, go on a walk, and connect with friends, or do anything we want that creates a bit more peace within the chaos. And I picked that one because, number one, it really resonated with the current time that we're chatting. And also you bring in the aspect of your other work, which is breath work, meditation, calm. So it makes me curious, how were you introduced to breath work, and how did you come to incorporate it as a part of your offering?
I was introduced to breath work in Costa Rica about 6 years ago for an ayahuasca retreat. And the retreat was 4 ayahuasca ceremonies in 4 nights. But the night before the ayahuasca ceremonies began, we did a breathwork journey, like an hour long breathwork journey. And the night after they ended, we did the same. And that was my introduction to this transformational breathwork practice. And I can say with certainty, it was as powerful for me as the plant medicine journeys. And I was completely blown away. I had no idea what was available to me through a breathwork practice. And like many things, so it changed my life, da, 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 da. And I'm like, I'm going to be doing this every day when I left there, and maybe like kept it up for a week or so and then kind of phased out. Mm-hmm. But returned to breathwork in the years following, and it was becoming more like played with Wim Hof breathing and different styles of breathwork. Mm-hmm. And then I just became really clear about a year and a half ago, a little more than a year and a half ago, I had just moved to Santa Fe, and I knew of this man named David Elliott, who's been guiding breathwork for nearly 4 decades now, I think. And my friend said, if you are going to train with him. And I woke up one morning in Santa Fe with breathwork as a part of my life for several months prior now. I'm like, I'm ready. I want to train. I want this to be part of the medicine I offer. I went on David Elliott's site, and it so happened his next training was happening in New Mexico, about 45 minutes from where I was living, this week-long intensive. And I'm like, okay, I get it, life. And usually like I'll hem and haw, do I really want to do it? But in that moment, I'm like, I signed up, I paid the deposit, I trained with him, and just have been consistently blown away by the places we can go through different breathing practices. And this practice for me, which I refer to as transformational breathwork, maybe under the umbrella of holotropic breathwork, the breath that aren't, they're less meditative than they are energizing and can take you to a state of that feels like psychedelics in a way. Have you played with breathwork? Is that why you're asking?
I have done breathwork exercises inside of like a greater workshop, meaning it was maybe more of like an exercise versus, you know, some colleagues I know do breathwork workshops that are dedicated exclusively to breathwork, which I have not experienced. My initial reaction to hearing about it was I should prepare myself before I sign up for an experience. A part of me was a little bit knowing how much can come out of it, I guess, that I thought, okay, make sure you're in a decent place before you sign up for breathwork. That's sort of what I told myself. But I'm curious, what's your experience and what can people get out of that? Yeah.
What I would say to you, what I was intuiting by when you said you feel like you should be in kind of like a good space to do breathwork, I was feeling you were thinking that breathwork actually isn't a practice if you're feeling down or off or something. I don't know if that's what you meant by it, but one of the most powerful aspects to this breathwork practice is its ability to move energy out of our bodies. So for me, if I'm feeling heavy, that's a beautiful time to go into a breathwork practice because I'm going to go in with the intention to clear some of that heaviness out. And as I'm inhaling, I'm going to imagine the breath taking me into these stuck places or these heavy places. And on every exhale, I'm going to imagine some of that energy moving outside of me. What I can say about what I've experienced, the gamut of what you can experience. I have literally communicated with past loved ones, and that has never been an experience that I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. I have had inner child healings. I have sobbed. I have laughed hysterically. The energy that I felt moving through my body, I felt like I could shoot laser beams out of the palms of my hands. Sometimes not much at all has happened. Sometimes I felt a little energy moving and that was it. Like, it's a whole host, the whole spectrum. But what I have observed, not only in myself, but in people I've guided who share with me, some of the most powerful spiritual healings I've ever experienced have happened through breathwork practices. And the number of people who have said to me, that is one of the most powerful experiences I've had in my life. It is a repeated testimonial after these practices. And you have to experience it because I could talk about it for hours and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Do you know what I mean? That'd be like trying to talk about an ayahuasca ceremony. But I encourage you, I'm going to very soon, once I get really, I just moved back to Detroit. And once I get settled in, I'll be moving into a new place fairly soon. And I'll be starting weekly online breath work. And please come. I invite you. You can come as my guest.
And just to clarify, the weekly online breath work, it's a virtual thing?
It's over Zoom. So you don't even have to leave your home. We spend an hour together. 25 to 30 minutes of that is spent in the active breath. And we set intentions, and it's beautiful, and it's deep.
Well, you know, I would love to experience that. I've always told myself that breath work is on my bucket list, you know?
Yeah.
And a part of me was sort of,
it's easier than say like a safari.
Easier than a safari. I'm probably probably for sure ayahuasca. So yeah, color me intrigued. Thank you. Right. And I'll be sure to keep updated on your offerings for breath work.
Wonderful.
And thank you for sharing the beautiful reflections. I do hear that you get the gambit just depending on your lived experience and what you want out of it and all of that. Yeah.
It's powerful stuff though. And it's available to us all the time. It's just breath. Literally. That's all it is.
Well, I'm not sure if this is breath work. This seems breath work adjacent as far as, but another reflection from your book. First, tell yourself the truth. Start there. Be willing to love yourself no matter what you discover, and then see what unfolds. This is a reflection that just personally struck me. I wrote it down. And what came up that, you know, I'm happy to hear you take in any direction is, what has been a hard truth that you had to confront in your life? And then I'm just curious, what happened after you confronted it?
I mean, I think there are a lot of hard truths. I have a mind that is wildly envious. That's a hard aspect of my personality to live with. Jealousy is a hard aspect of my personality to live with. Any of the difficult things that our insecure and fearful human minds create for us to contend with, those are hard things to contend with. It's hard to face the parts of ourselves that we view as ugly, right? Or is dysfunctional. It's hard for me to look at my mind and see just how insane my mind can be. The most important aspect, it's important to tell ourselves the truth. Denial gets us nowhere. But what's as important or most important in what you just read for me is be willing to love yourself no matter what. Because it's in that willingness to offer ourselves love that we're able to be with harder truths, that we're able to get honest with ourselves, because we know that no matter what it is we're discovering, when we do that internal exploration, that we are committed to loving ourselves no matter what. And that kind of love, that commitment to love, it allows us to be so much braver so much more courageous, not only in our relationship with ourselves, but in our relationship with other people, because we know that on the other side of everything, we've got our own backs. And when you know you have your own back, you're going to be much more inclined to take risks. You're going to be much more inclined to move forward in alignment with what your heart's calling you to do, instead of the fearful boundaries that your mind is placing on you. These, for me, are all the gifts that come with a commitment to self-love.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And it makes me, I want to read Big Love soon, because I know you talked about some of the experience where you get to dive inside some of your personal journey, right? With the movie that you're referring to, which I believe is called Oogie Loves, correct?
Oogie Loves and the Big Balloon Adventure.
And what I've heard in discussion when you were talking about it in interviews is you had to take yourself through this like love journey after the fact, and that everything that you're sharing is really based on things that you have worked on for yourself as well. It's not just like something that other people have to improve upon, but this is something that you had to go through.
It's Robert. I mean, I'm someone who is I bring a lot of awareness, attention and intention to the life I'm living from the perspective of I'm often considering what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. You know, even it's like I'm a processor. You know, I find that this spiritual path or this healing path, whatever words you want to put on it, I find it to be a really fascinating and enriching way to live my life. So I'm someone who's generally thinking about, well, why are you doing this right now? And why are you doing this right now? But from a place that may have felt overwhelming in the past, because I think when you bring more awareness to your life, you're going to see just how insane you are. It's like, oh, here I am again. My mind is like doing this again. But the beauty can be if you bring to that awareness this like really genuine sense of curiosity. Like I am bringing more awareness to my life, not to shame myself for the choices I'm making, but to get curious about why I'm showing up the way I am, and to offer myself grace as much as possible. And the consistent reminder that this too is human. Everything you're experiencing, Robert, is human. Everything you're thinking about is human, or you wouldn't be thinking it. You're a human being who's thinking these things, which means this is a part of the human experience. And the same goes for myself. And I don't use that as a justification to be an asshole or to do horrible things to people. I use that reminder that this too is human,
right,
as a reason to offer myself grace when I'm making be the healthiest choices I could be making for myself. Even in those moments, rather than shaming ourselves, which doesn't ever lead to healing, at least not in my life, I am committed to giving myself love no matter what. And what I've noticed is in that commitment, I'm so much more inclined to offer others love as well.
Thank you for sharing that reflection, because obviously the current times in the past few weeks, I've been thinking about love a lot more. It's not always easy or simple, and yet here we are. So this is something where your book, I can almost see myself flipping to a page randomly one day just to remind myself of something that would be intuitive and genuine and in the moment. So
would you do that? Can we play a game for a moment?
Yeah.
Or not a game, but it's between 2 and 219. If you pick a number that you're feeling called to choose, I'll read you what's on that page.
Between 2 and 219.
Yeah.
167, please.
All right. Let's see what's in your cards, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
167. Okay. This is for you and for everyone. We need to give ourselves as much support as possible when we're facing our fears or pursuing our dreams or even just struggling to get out of bed and take a shower. Instead of focusing on all the times we failed or fell short, why not focus on all the times we didn't? Why not consider all the different ways we've already done exactly what it is we're trying to do now? We have confronted our fears. We have pushed beyond our comfort zone. We have had difficult conversations, and we have lifted ourselves up after any number of falls. Whatever it is we feel called to do, let's not waste our time convincing ourselves we can't do it. We can do it. We probably already have done it many times in any number of ways.
Well,
does that resonate?
Yes, but I'm trying not to be emotional. That's, you know, we're professionals over here. No, it really, with the cats and the internet.
Is it being emotional?
I know. And then I was like, breath work sounds suspicious. And yeah, you're really getting a sampling of my true personality in some ways. No, seriously, thank you for that. And I love hearing reflections like that. I like putting them up on my little vision board and everything. Because sometimes you need that little jolt of inspiration. And that's why I love, you know, you talk about public speaking and conversation, sometimes feeling more organic. And I think in some ways I would identify with that. And writing is very difficult for me. But there's something about the power of language and the power of reminding ourselves of certain insights that I think absolutely comes through, you know, your voice and your writing. And in some ways that was such a beautiful place to end. I do have one last question that I would regret if I don't ask you. I don't know if you would wear this title, but I consider you to be a multi-genre writer. And in some ways you've written novels, short stories, children's books, short prose, poetry, screenplays, you know, fiction, nonfiction, and I'm sure many others that I haven't even listed. Do you have any advice for people who are writers but want to wind up having to explore different genres because of work and career, or because they feel like it would reflect more of their whole essence? Do you have any advice for writers navigating different genres and forms, and how have you navigated that?
I mean, my general advice around writing would be write what you feel called to write. And if today you're feeling called to work on a nonfiction piece, work on that. And if tomorrow it's a fiction piece, work on that, especially if you're not bound to a deadline on a specific project. If you are bound to deadlines, right, that informs what you're working on, which is actually nice because then you don't really have to think about it. You're like, this is what I have to do. But outside of that, if you have the liberty to bring to your writing a sense of joy and desire around what it is you want to explore, play with that. And so often, what can happen is that you find, I'm in the nonfiction zone right now. I'm in this like inspirational writing zone. And the, if you align with what Liz Gilbert is saying, like the muse is trying to present me with this right now.
Yeah.
And so my heart is open to playing in this world, play in that world as long as it feels good. And then when you want to shift.
Yeah.
Right. Like I would apply that to life in general. Like part of creating a more meaningful life for ourselves is allowing ourselves to play more, is allowing ourselves to participate in experiences and relationships and circumstances that feel aligned with our heart's calling. The more we do that, the more fulfilling our life is going to become. It's the only possibility. So apply that to writing, apply it to work, apply it to relationships, and as much as possible, align yourself with what feels good in the moment. And obviously we can't always do that. Life is happening. Life's not always about feeling good. But I don't think we're even considering that possibility as often as we should or could be. Like, what makes me feel good? Write a list, pick something off that list and do it. And you're going to be feeling better more often.
Thank you for your generosity and for your time today. And thank you for all of your wonderful reflections and Enough As You Are. But maybe one last thing, is there a particular reflection that that's been on your mind and on your heart lately?
Yeah, I can't open the book to a specific piece of writing, but the theme, which is in that book, is really just what's on my heart lately is noticing how severe the hypocrisy is in our world and in all of us to some degree. And if we were only willing to look at the ways in which we are shaming others for doing the exact same things that we're doing or have done, we might be less inclined to shame our fellow human beings and to dehumanize them. So for me, it's reflections that are about taking ownership of our lives in an honest way, looking at how we're showing up in an honest way, instead of projecting onto others all of our unresolved bullshit essentially, and all of the places inside of ourselves we're unwilling to look at honestly. It becomes so much easier then to project onto others these things and to lose touch with another person's humanity.
Thank you. Thank you. I couldn't have thought of a better conclusion to our conversation today, especially in the time. So thank you, Scott, for your writing, for your voice, for the community that you cultivate. And I hope you can stay connected, and I look forward to maybe some breathwork offerings, I suppose. It's been dropped into my lap. So here we are.
I encourage you. And you live in New York City. There are any number of live offerings there at any time.
Absolutely.
So you can find that around the corner, I'm sure.
I'll keep you updated.
Thank you so much, Robert. Okay, please do. Yeah, and thank you for this. It's really lovely to connect with you in this way.
Thank you.